Welcome to the Talkin' Tide podcast. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined by Travis Ryer, and we are live on Ryer on YouTube for the Sunday Nighter, recapping Alabama's 41-34 victory over the Georgia Bulldogs. Huge tilt, biggest regular season game of the season to date in college football. Alabama gets it done in a game that began like a snoozer, ended like a thriller, and was by the time the final, by the time the clock hit zeros, it was definitely all it was cracked up to be. Travis, 41-34, again, the final score. Alabama jumps out to a 28-0 lead, and it dissipates rather quickly in the second half. And to the horror of a home sellout crowd, Bulldogs even briefly took a one-point lead before Alabama was able to commandeer the victory.
It almost felt like a best of three in one game, right? Alabama won game one, Georgia won game two, and then there was this sort of tiebreaker in the final 2.5-3 minutes, and Alabama was able to come out on top in that scenario. Wild, absolutely wild. You know, just some numbers from this game. If I had told you before the game that Alabama defensively was going to hold Georgia to 80 rushing yards, if Alabama was going to finish plus three in turnover margin, if Alabama was going to score 39 points on offense, you'd have felt really comfortable Alabama on Saturday night, wouldn't you?
No doubt.
But it still wasn't enough. Took everything Alabama had to get the job done.
Yeah, offensively for Alabama, we'll start there. Of course, a huge game for Jalen Milroe. To me, Travis, kind of a defining game in his career as far as I'm concerned. I saw him, in my opinion, took some strides that we maybe hadn't seen before. I thought he emerged from this game as a better quarterback. I look at him a little differently coming out of this game than I did going in. I thought he was excellent early when they were hitting Georgia with some of the short, quick stuff. Obviously he was able to hit the explosives deep. He was effective as a runner, a lot of that on designed runs. And, he gave Georgia fits in this game. The final numbers on him, 27 out of 33, 371 yards, couple of touchdowns, had an interception that was not on him, right? Comes right out of the breadbasket on CJ Dupree. And that was the lone interception. Definitely not on Milroe. That throw might have been just a hair behind Dupree, but he had two hands on it. It hit him in the waist. You got to catch that football.
I think CJ would tell you he needs to catch it if it was like a car accident situation. I think it would have been maybe no fault because right. I think Jalen did what he needed to do. Now, he had the back down in the flat if you watch it in the replay. But he did what he needed to do to get that ball in there. It was hot. I mean, that ball was whistled. And it had to be because you had some traffic there in the middle of the field. The first bobble is what ultimately led to the interception because that provided the linebacker with the opportunity to hit CJ simultaneous to what led to the second deflection. And then the safety's just there to cover it up. But, yeah, I mean, I agree. In terms of Jalen's continued growth and development, you know, it kind of goes back to when DeBoer took this thing over. I think a lot of us were thinking now, how's this going to fit? How's this going to work? Because of what we had seen from DeBoer, especially with Michael Penix out at Washington. But what we consistently heard from Kalen DeBoer was almost this giddiness about getting to use a guy like this who could do everything that we saw on display on Saturday night. And boy, they've packaged it nicely and ball's coming out quick. Ball's coming out accurately. Seems like they have answers for this spy stuff that Alabama never really answered a year ago in the old offense. And it's just it's a fully in command and confident Jalen Milroe we're seeing right now.
No question. Big game for him on the ground, 16 for 117 and a couple of touchdowns. And the play call. And I thought I liked what we saw from Nick Sheridan. Little bit of gadgetry here and there, right? It didn't really go anywhere. They had the double reverse pass that went nowhere. Had a play where Kendrick Law was going to cut one loose, and he double clutched it, I think, a couple of times. Didn't like what he saw.
Trying to look and, off the safety, you know.
Yeah, CJ Dupree said after the game he was the intended receiver on that one, but never came up from kick. Hey, sometimes the smartest thing to do on that play is to eat it. Yeah. And then what about Travis, the dupe on the direct snap to Jam Miller, where Miller, Milrow's kind of looking toward the sideline, maybe trying to get a new play. And yeah, I watched the all 22 on that play, and they didn't dupe everybody in that Georgia front seven on that play. But when Milrow went, started taking a step toward the sideline, a couple of those Georgia defenders stood up like, all right, what's going on here? And then bang, here comes the direct snap. So pretty creative from Nick Sheridan, I thought.
Yeah, if you were wondering what else Alabama still had in the bag after the first three games, they kind of took the bag and dumped it, you know, in the middle of the table on Saturday night. And that was just in the first half alone. So absolutely, the direct snap to Jam, that leads to a touchdown run on the very next snap on a keeper by Jalen Milrow, who was just absolutely devastating with both his legs and his arm for much of the night. So I agree. I thought, you know, it was kind of in some ways a carryover from Wisconsin, with Jalen so involved in the run game and that two-way sort of approach with the backs and Jalen. And what was startling to me was that I thought Alabama, in terms of speed and just everything else on offense, kind of made Georgia look like Wisconsin on defense, right? Made Georgia look kind of lumbering and slow, which I didn't anticipate being the case. And didn't back down from anyone on that Georgia defense either. I mean, they went five-man protection, even though Mykel Williams played in the game. They went after Malachi Starks. You know, they didn't back up from Malachi Starks either. I thought the injury to Kendrick was bigger than probably most people would think, especially as you got into the second half, because of all the different things they're able to do with him. But look, when they needed it the most, it was the kid, Ryan Williams, that just – you know, we've watched a lot of Bama football, Chase, and we've seen a lot of great receivers, especially in the Saban era. But even going back to the guys like David Palmer, I mean, I know the old heads, the leather heads out there can go back to maybe even Don Hudson. But right, this guy is really unlike anything we've seen to this point.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He took it to a new level against Georgia. Saw some things from him in terms of just shake and bake, right? Making guys miss. You had the juggling catch that was just a circus play. Probably the most impressive catch. Obviously, the most impactful catch was the last one that goes 75 yards for the game-winning touchdown. Kind of a stutter spin move to get away from two defenders on that one before he was able to scamper in for the last 20. And, you know, you talk about a burst. You get away from those two guys with a stop and spin, but then Georgia, the guy had an angle on him to shove him out of bounds, and Williams somehow or another got him to throttle down a little bit, and then he burst right by him straight into the end zone. 7 for 166 receiving was Ryan Williams. Now number one in the entire NCAA, Travis, in yards per catch at 28.9. Just a phenomenal night for the 17-year-old Frosh.
Yeah, it was stunning. Again, you kind of knew already that this guy's special, but to see him do it against a defense like that, to really just sort of normalize Georgia in that area.
Yeah.
Took it to another level and is only going to increase the hype moving forward. But, you know, I thought a couple things there in that closing sequence with both teams. Dylan Bell hits Alabama with a double move. We heard Kirby talk about this post game. When you're getting explosive plays like that, it is so important to get guys on the ground short of the end zone. Alabama couldn't do it with Dylan Bell. It was enough that he got behind Keon Saab, but then Saab couldn't make the tackle. You know, and Dylan Bell's able to go into the end zone to give Georgia that first lead of the night. Same thing as you're talking about with Ryan Williams and just the twitch, like you said, it was enough to make the catch and then initially make the two defenders collide, but then to kick it back in and then beat them both to the end zone. That's, you just don't see that very much.
I had that other catch earlier in the game where he made a move with his back to the defender, turns around, makes another couple cuts, probably got another, I don't know, 5-6 yards out of it. It's not like he broke away, but just in terms of making guys look silly, reminded me of David Palmer, to be honest. And I realized David Palmer was a shorter guy, you know, not quite as lanky as Ryan Williams. I'm not talking about body type, but just in terms of being able to juke guys, right?
Short space quickness.
Exactly.
That's what Deuce had. That's why he was such a good punt returner. It wasn't top end speed with Deuce, right? It was make you miss, embarrass you. And oh, by the way, Deuce could jump in there behind center if he needed to at Ole Miss and hit crossing routes from the quarterback position. So, yeah, I agree. It's almost as if you take a little bit of some of the very best to ever do it at Alabama, and now you've packaged it in one guy in Ryan Williams.
Phenomenal talent, no doubt about it. He is on his way. He's at the star point. He's a star on this football team. He's only going to make Jalen Milroe better. He's everything in Jalen Milroe needs and more. Although I'll say, Travis, for a wide receiving core that 2022, 2023 maybe looked like it had taken a little bit of a dip.
Yeah.
This group is performing well as a whole. It's not just Ryan Williams. Jeremy Bernard making some good plays. Jeremy Bernard's a heck of a blocker too, by the way.
And that came in handy last night once you lost Kendrick Law, because Bernard still gives you that sort of physical presence. Emmanuel Henderson's kind of that kind of guy as well. And the tight ends last night, man. I mean, you had three different tight ends catch balls. CJ Dupree was borderline prolific in the first half, and that was the answer when Georgia started bringing some numbers too. Okay, you want to bring an inside backer? We're going to hit Dupree right behind you or hit him on some crosses. Again, as you said, Nick Sheridan seemed to have a lot of the answers for the questions.
How about the pass protection, Travis? You barely noticed Elijah Pritchett at right tackle. I think he did have a couple of flags on him, but still, I thought the pass protection for Milroe, given the defense they were facing, and who knows how close to 100% Mykel Williams was, but I don't care. It was a strong effort pass protection-wise.
Yeah, I mean, Caden Proctor, just having him back has obviously been a godsend for that group, because, you know, you can feel like you can protect with five. You don't always have to keep a sixth or a seventh in to protect. And Pritchett is serviceable, and I think that's all he needs to be. If you can just get Pritchett to where he's serviceable at right tackle. And I thought Elijah did some good things in the run game. You know, they kind of ran GT counter on one particular run, I think, to Justice, and, you know, Pritchett did a nice job out in front of that. So he's doing some good things. The penalties, you need to continue to clean those up. And if you do ask him to do a little much in pass protection, he's going to give up some pressures. But, you know, I think that's where Jalen's growth is showing up too as well. He's helping to cover for some deficiencies by standing in there, making some tough throws. And he also has the arm talent to make some of these flat-footed throws. And a couple of them were a little bit breathtaking because they were dangerous, especially late in the game. But Jeremy Bernard helped him out. I thought Cole Adams had a big third down catch there in the fourth quarter.
I like
that Josh Cuevas attacked the football, kind of coming back to it on a deep stop route, and then created another 10 yards for himself after the catch by doing so. And with Ryan Williams, as we talked about before, he creates so much space for himself and everyone else, because if you put him in the slot and you just run him like on that slot fade or just a go, boy, everything to the top of him is going to be pretty soft and open. So it all plays in, right? This offense feels very connected in everything that it's doing conceptually.
I thought too, a play that struck me, Travis, that I thought kind of illustrated some maturity and growth from Jalen Milroe, was a throw to CJ Dupree over the middle of the field. That was a pretty big gainer. It got called back. I think it got called back on a personal foul by Tyler Booker. If you watch that play, Georgia came with a linebacker on a blitz on that play. Mm-hmm. And CJ Dupree's route put him right in the void where the blitz had been. And I think Jalen Milroe, a year ago when that blitz comes, he's tucking it, right? He's out the gate with it. Here, in this instance, the blitz comes. He knows And Peyton Manning used to talk about this all the time because no one's ever burned the blitz better than Peyton Manning. When that blitz comes, that tells you where the hole is, right? Yeah. That tells you where the void is in the defense.
Hit them where they ain't.
Yeah. CJ Dupree was sitting right there where that linebacker would have been had he dropped. Mm-hmm. Hits him over the middle. He's wide open. He picks up a big gain. Comes back on a flag. But just from Milroe's perspective, I thought that showed some maturity and some growth in his game.
I think the plan is just far more advanced too, though, this year in terms of there is a very strong understanding of what this offense wants to be conceptually. This is Kalen DeBoer, Nick Sheridan's offense. This isn't the Alabama offense anymore, you know, and it worked under Nick Saban. That's not to say it didn't, but you know, you were asking coordinators to adapt more than you were even the players with all those changes at the coordinator position on a year-to-year basis. And I think what you've seen is Kalen DeBoer and Nick Sheridan adapt very nicely to Jalen Milroe using his legs. That's been a difference for sure between Michael Penix and what we've seen from Jalen. But there are some core aspects to this offense that any quarterback that gets back there is going to have to be able to carry out. And I think also in a lot of ways, you know, some of the lumps that you pointed out that Jalen took a year ago, he's utilized them nicely and it's helped him in his growth.
Let's jump over to the defensive side of the football, Travis, for the Crimson Tide. Obviously a great showing for Alabama's defense in the first half. It comes unglued on him in the second half as Georgia mounted that huge comeback. And look, the offense wasn't great in the second half either. The offense scored 3 points in the first 27 minutes of the first half of the second half, right? So it was on the offense too that Georgia come back, but and the defense did give them that safety that was huge, right? The intentional grounding in the end zone, Carson Beck. I think it was Keanu Coate that brought the heat on that one, along with somebody else. Q was the other one.
Yeah.
So, but you know what, Travis, and you mentioned the double move earlier in the podcast. When you give up a 30-yard pass, Alabama's secondary gave up a 30-yard pass, a 47-yard pass, and a 67-yard pass. That's almost 150 yards between the three of them on three straight pass attempts to either score or set up.
Right.
Two touchdowns that take you from 33-21 to 34-33. And I mean, in the blink of an eye, it took no time at all. That's what Kane Womack's going to be mentioning at the top, I think, of his press conference on Monday morning.
Yeah. You gave up fourth down conversions, but in doing so, Georgia was taking a lot of time to kind of go the length of the field. At least you were making Georgia earn it in those scenarios, even when you were committing some defensive penalties to help Georgia on some of those fourth downs. But man, when you do that and then you give up the explosive plays like you did in the second half, I think it was 5 completions of 30 yards or more just in the second half for Carson Beck. That's when it becomes a problematic sort of combination. And you know, Georgia kind of figured out, look, we're going to work on these young corners. We're going to work the slants. Then we're going to work the goes. And kind of like Ryan Williams, we're going to put it up there against man coverage, and we think our guy's better than yours. And that was pretty much the case. And it was tough for safeties too. Malachi Starks, we talked about, got caught in a tough situation with Ryan Williams on the tip ball that Ryan came up with. And then Dylan Bell got Keon Sabb on that double move. And it also started with protection. I thought Alabama brought 6 in the third quarter. Georgia's down 30-7. They get the ball out hot. I think it was Dom Lovett. They got the ball out too hot in the slot. Red Morgan misses the tackle after you bring 6. It ends up being an explosive play down inside the red zone. Mm-hmm. We didn't really see Alabama dial up 6-man pressure after that. But even with that, not able to get a lot of pressure with the 4-man pass rush 3 sometimes. And Beck just kind of showed you why the NFL people seem to like him pretty good.
Yeah, you know, a couple of weeks ago when Alabama played USF and we saw a couple of USF receivers get loose deep behind the Alabama secondary and those passes got overthrown. You and I were on this podcast after that game saying Carson Beck won't miss those if it happens again. And sure enough, they got behind the Alabama secondary, which is really, when you got a lead like that, especially, you hate to see that from a defensive standpoint. You've mentioned that Womack really doesn't like to go dime, really doesn't like to go six defensive backs.
I still haven't seen dime from them. I don't know. Maybe you have, but I haven't seen dime this season.
I haven't noticed it.
They're gonna play nickel, you know, against whatever. So.
Yeah. And, you know, it's more of a vision defense. There are more eyes on the quarterback in this defense, which makes you vulnerable to double moves.
Yeah.
But situationally, when you're sitting on a two-score lead in the second half and you know the other team has got to strike quickly, defense has got to figure something out to keep people in front of them.
You do. Like I said, if you're giving up fourth down conversions, but you're keeping it in front and you're making tackles and you're kind of eating clock in the process, that's one thing. But when you're giving those up and then you give up the explosive plays on top, then you know, you're going to give up a lot of points and yards like Alabama did there in the second half.
Four turnovers for the Alabama defense, three of them on interceptions, Jihaad Campbell, Damani Jackson, and of course, Xavien Brown. We haven't mentioned the play Xavien Brown made at the end of the game to clinch this thing. Huge interception of Carson Beck that put the game away. All of that was definitely huge for this defense. Beck finished 27 out of 50 for 439, three touchdowns, three interceptions. Your thoughts on the takeaway side of things, Travis?
Like I said to start the show, if you'd have told me that Alabama was going to take it away four times, be plus three in turnover margin, I would have liked the Crimson Tide by more than a touchdown. But yeah, the fourth down conversions, especially the penalties on fourth down, I thought Alabama prior to some of those fourth downs was poised, was, you know, very much engaged and doing what it needed to do. But on a couple of the fourth downs, it's a little bit panicky, a little bit of anxiety maybe in those situations. I know you can talk about how the game was officiated. I thought for the most part, the officials just let them play, as evidenced by the pass interference call that wasn't made against Georgia right before the end of the second quarter over on the Alabama sideline. But, you know, defensively, you took the ball away. Now, you know, you just got to work on, again, limiting explosive plays. Now, that being said, you're thinking Tennessee probably more in that regard as far as the upcoming schedule is concerned. The good news is you still got some time between now and then. You know, you got Vanderbilt coming up, South Carolina, Mizzou. You're going to have an opportunity to continue to improve in those areas. And I know it wasn't always pretty and it was tough to watch. But some young guys got some invaluable experience in that game Saturday night. And you got it while getting a win. I mean, it was the double bonus, really. And I'll say this for Xavien Brown, man. Georgia kept going at him, and it wasn't always positive. But at the end of the game, when Alabama, you're asking yourself, I was anyway, at the end of that game, is there going to be a hero for this Alabama defense? Where's the hero at? You know, who's going to make a play? Because the last time we saw Alabama in a situation like this was the Michigan game and that drive right before the end of regulation.
No hero.
No heroes.
Yeah.
No heroes in Pasadena. Well, kind of ironic, isn't it, that it's a kid from LA as a true freshman makes the play. And I'll give him credit. I mean, they had gone at him with pretty much the same route over and over again. And that this last time he was anticipating it, pretty much had his eyes to Carson Beck the whole time, but still made a heck of a grab, too. I don't know if that gets valued enough, the catch that he actually made.
Heck of a grab, and Womack continues to churn guys in and out
He does, man.
defensively. It doesn't matter. You know, it's, you know, with Saban, you saw guys rotate on the defensive line, and that was pretty much it, unless it was some kind of a personnel change for scheme. But
I don't see any defensive coordinator that I see rotate like that
right.
at corner and Husky at three spots, you know, in the secondary.
In and out they go. It's a revolving door.
And it should help you in recruiting, you know, because if you're on the two deep right now at corner, maybe you're even playing. The three, you're going to have a chance to play. And that's before even special teams are taken into account. So speaking of special teams, we need to talk about that, because a couple of situations in the game Saturday night where it was almost catastrophic, especially late in the game with that kickoff return that was muffed by Ryan Williams, fair catch called by Cole Adams.
Oh,
Ryan brutal. Muffs it. And then Cole gets on it and then does the signal, does fair catch from the ground.
Right. Sorry.
And the official just steps right up there and spots it at the two. First down.
Yeah, that was danger territory for sure. Jalen Milroe, I believe, hit at least one. He hit a third down throw to kind of get out of that hole.
Jeremy Bernard made a hell of a catch.
In traffic. Yeah,
because Jalen had pressure right up into his face. And that was the one I'm talking about where you could see Malachi Starks picking that off and housing it right there. And Bernard kind of used his body, got it, stayed inside, got inside, and really helped this quarterback right there.
No question about it. Travis, when we had our Georgia preview pod, I can recall you saying you were looking forward to seeing how Womack would use that Wolf position, the outside linebacker in this game. How about a Wolf report from you? What'd you see?
Well, I mean, we saw the guys we typically see, and we saw an approach that I think is pretty similar to what we had seen in the first three games. I did think we saw more of what looked like a four-man front, using that Wolf as more of a true edge than sort of kind of a hybrid guy there at the interior level. Quay Roussel coming off the injury, you talk about a big play. It seemed like it at the time. The only thing I'll say about the takeaways too was, three of those four weren't only takeaways, they were field position takeaways. Like, they set Alabama offensively up in some good spots, and I think just one of those did Alabama take advantage of. So I know we've gotten on the defense a little bit about the explosive plays, but for what they did in terms of stealing possessions and setting up field position,
right?
I mean, Alabama could have scored in the mid-50s in this game. It felt like there were some wasted opportunities late in the first half and then off a couple of those turnovers to go along with that. But, I thought those guys were fine. You talk about Keanu Coote with the pressure. Alabama brought 8 on that 3rd and 10. I mean, they brought the house.
Coming.
And Coote was there. Q Robinson was there. I thought it was a solid night. I mean, I was worried about the perimeter runs in the quick game to the perimeter. And really, Alabama was fine in those areas. It was more in the intermediate, the vertical passing game in the second half where it kind of unraveled a little bit.
Yeah, you knew Georgia was going to make a run. 28-0 the way it was. And, of course, they popped that first touchdown, make it 28-7. Alabama's still in great shape there. But you knew the run was coming. It had to be coming. What I was expecting was that I expected Georgia's offense to come to life and close the gap some, but I didn't expect Alabama's offense to more or less disappear for most of the second half, which it did. They did pop a field goal, help them out a little bit.
That was the only sustained drive of the half.
Yeah.
It was a field goal drive. That was it.
So, Georgia's defense, Georgia had to play good on both sides to get back in that game, and they did.
They got stops. Kirby said it at halftime when they asked him at 30-7, what's it going to take? And he said stops.
Yeah.
And I think on 4 of the first 5 possessions for Alabama the second half, Georgia got stops. The field goal you could say was a stop, because at 30-15 – on that drive, if Alabama gets in and goes up 37-15, that's ball game right there.
Curtains.
But you limit it to a red zone field goal from Graham Nicholson, who he scared some people right here, Lance, in our comments. Graham Nicholson is 1 inch from being 0-for-2. He took a little paint off that right upright, the Miami of Ohio transfer did. But Georgia did what they needed to do defensively. And I know situationally, with the way that this offense likes to operate, you're kind of wondering how that would go, and didn't exactly take the clock there when you had a chance with about 4.5 minutes to go.
Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, quick programming note for Tide Talking Tide Nation. Going to jump straight to another Sunday nighter next week following Alabama's tilt against the Vanderbilt Commodores. That'll be, of course, in Nashville next Saturday. Won't do a Vanderbilt preview pod this coming midweek because I'm going to be traveling for my mother's 80th birthday, as a matter of fact. Looking forward to that.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Goodbread.
Yeah, so we'll just do a quick two-minute Vanderbilt preview right now, Travis. Diego Pavia, I know we're both fans of his. Yes, leading the Commodores.
Viva Diego.
He's a swashbuckler, that one. He'll run it. He'll throw it. He's gutsy. He's fun to watch. The Doors, 2-2 on the year. Of course, they knocked off Virginia
Tech. Could be 4-0. I mean, it could be 4-0.
Should be
3-1. No way you should lose to Georgia State.
Could be 1-3. You know, they got an overtime win against Virginia Tech.
True. It goes both ways.
Lost to Missouri in double overtime. Lost to Georgia State. Georgia State better than anybody probably thought they'd be. And, of course, they beat Virginia Tech in overtime in the opener to go 1-0. Week two, they knocked off Alcorn State. They've lost two in a row now to Georgia State and Missouri. Travis, heading back to Nashville, looking forward to seeing Dudley Field once again. I know you and I were on hand for that 07 Alabama Vanderbilt tilt, which was Nick Saban's first SEC game ever, just as DeBoer just had his first SEC game. Well, excuse me, it was Nick Saban's first SEC game at Alabama against the Commodores, as DeBoer just had his first at Alabama. And
that preceded that wild Arkansas game in Tuscaloosa, didn't it? Remember that one with Darren McFadden and Matt Cadell?
Matt Cadell caught that big touchdown pass in the end zone. Yes. Peyton Hillis.
You had Felix Jones, Peyton Hillis, and Darren McFadden in the same damn backfield. And we don't want to go too far into it, but I remember McFadden, I guess he was concussed maybe in that game or something. You talk about an all-timer that doesn't get talked about enough, that 07 Alabama-Arkansas game.
You're right. We don't want to get too far in the weeds, but I do have one other memory of that game, Travis, that I'll never forget. What about that awful Arkansas defensive tackle Ernest Mitchell taking a helmet to the bare forehead of Justin Britt? Got ejected from the game. Could have seriously hurt him. Britt was fine. When you take a swing at somebody's head when they don't have a helmet on he was hitting him with his own helmet, right? He picked up Britt's helmet.
Yeah, I think so.
That was
you had the Brits in that era. That's for sure. That was the Brit era. I think there was three of them. Taylor, Justin, and Wes. I think are the three Brits from back then. But Lance is asking, what time is the Vandy game? That's 3:15 Central coming up this Saturday.
Odd time.
Up there on the West End. The West End of Nashville. You can get in a little trouble on that West End if you don't watch out.
It can happen. It's been known to happen. I know I know that area fairly well. The SEC look around really quickly, Travis, a couple games before we get out of here. Kentucky handing Ole Miss its first loss of the season. That final score, 20-17. Oklahoma knocks off Auburn 27-21. Those are the two games I figured we'd touch on. Starting with Kentucky, though, what about UK's defense holding Ole Miss to 17 points in Oxford and then hitting them with that 4th-and-7 deep ball late in the game? Burned the Rebels.
Did stun the Rebels in Oxford. Boy, Mark Stoops, he can dial it up defensively now. And I'll tell you what Kentucky does have. They have a defensive line. And, you know, you think about who had Ole Miss really seen. And even Lane had said this, right, in terms of the first four games or whatever it was for Ole Miss. They really hadn't been tested at all. Kentucky showed you against Georgia. It can hang in up front in the trenches. I think we found out Ole Miss is, I think improved defensively for sure. The Ole Miss defense actually did their job for the most part, gave up that deep ball late. That wasn't good, but that was a stunner, man. And I think unless Kentucky kind of goes on to win the SEC championship, maybe Ole Miss unless they go on to win the SEC championship, that might be a loss that keeps them out of the college football playoff, even if they're a two-loss team.
Lane Kiffin, after the game, I don't know if you caught his press conference, but he was talking about that 4th-and-7 deep ball Kentucky hit, and he said at the end of the game, he said, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, congratulations to Mark Stoops. I think that's the first time he's ever tried anything like that in his life.
Well, you know, they got after Stoops. He went conservative against Georgia.
Yeah.
Fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Punted the ball late, and he didn't punt it. He didn't punt it Saturday. I think Lane would have appreciated it if he had done that. But Mark, not so generous this time around.
Pick six for OU down on the Plains. Gets it done for the Sooners. 27-21. Hugh Freeze under fire down there. Travis, for sure. They don't like it. They don't like what they see. He's out of options with that.
They don't like what they see, and they don't like what they hear from him.
No.
And just looking at Hugh right now, Hugh doesn't look good to me. You know, right? I mean, he's aging in dog years right now with that quarterback situation. And look, I thought Peyton Thorne by the end of last year, I know he did some decent things against Alabama in the Iron Bowl, but then turned right around in that bowl game debacle in Nashville, looked awful. And Hugh sat pat with his quarterback situation, didn't go portal up, and Thorne actually did some good things against Oklahoma, but man, just to lose a game like that when Oklahoma was so hamstrung offensively, you know, Oklahoma, because of injuries at wide receiver, it looked like they had sort of stand-in receivers that you would see in a football movie, like a college football movie made about football.
Right.
You know, get these stand-in wide receiver looking guys. That's what Oklahoma's wide receiver unit looked like, and still got the job done. That was a big win for Brent Venables too, and probably that offensive staff at Oklahoma, because Brent probably isn't going to go after this season if it doesn't go well the rest of the way. But somebody on that staff's going to go, and I don't think it's going to be the defensive guys either, because that's Brent's baby.
Michael Hawkins Jr. taking the reins for that OU offense. He's a gutsy guy, too. He's not afraid. Gave up his body at the goal line.
He sells it out, man.
In a row.
I don't know how sustainable that is. I mean, it's fun to watch, and you respect it and admire it, but he's not the biggest guy in the world, and there's a lot of SEC football left to play. I mean, they got Texas next, man.
Yeah.
So if they lose that game Saturday, they're looking really hardly at 0-3 in the league to start
Texas,
their SEC run.
Texas sleptwalked a little bit in that first half against Mississippi State. Got that done 35-13. Arch Manning, another start. Quinn Ewers got that abdominal strain that's kept him out the last couple weeks. Arch Manning has looked phenomenal in his stead. He got all the athletic ability in the whole Manning family, I think. which is not to disparage Archie's athletic.
Yeah.
He could run around too, but
Arch
can tuck it now.
Well, and Arch's dad, Cuppa, you know, it's Cooper, but in the Manning family, it's pronounced Cuppa. He was a wide receiver, you know, went to Ole Miss and had some health issues that kind of ended his career prematurely. So somewhere in there is some speed. I agree. I think he's looked really good. I think there's also been moments where I think Quinn Ewers is going to be right back in there when he's healthy. Maybe that'll be against Texas coming up.
A lot of fun. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give it a like, give it a subscribe, and catch us once again next Sunday when we recap Alabama's road game at Vanderbilt. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tide.